Okay, so thank you very much for the invitation to speak on two continents at once. So I'll speak about skew-how duality and categorified non-invariants. So the talk will be sort of pretty basic. I won't assume too much background. So here's the plan. I'll begin by recalling the idea of Rushdie and Shrive invariants and also Webbs. Then I'll discuss skew-how duality and how skew-how duality lets you understand Webbs. Then I'll talk about categorical GLM actions and how this allows you to, categorical GLM. Then I'll talk about how this allows you to construct foam categories. And categorical non-invariants. And finally, if there's time, I'll talk about some more recent developments in this, in terms of annular versions, some of these guys. Okay. So let me begin with the basics. So maybe you, most people are already sort of familiar with this, but just to make sure everybody understands where we're coming from. So let me start G, a semi-simple Lie algebra. And I have an associated quantum group, UQG. And then there's this amazing construction of Rushdie and Shrive for producing non-invariants colored by representations of the quantum group. And let me explain sort of how it works, but I'll do it in a very simple context. Sort of a knot that looks like a figure eight. So what we do is we associate, we cut our knot into pieces like this. So in between each horizontal line, something interesting happens. Here's a cup, here's a crossing, here's another cup. And associated to each horizontal line, I'm going to put a vector space, actually a representation of the quantum group. So here I'll put the trivial representation of the quantum group. Let me just, for simplicity, work over the field of rational functions in Q. And this knot is colored by a representation. We call it V, and it also has a direction. So here I see V going down, and then I see V going up. So I put V dual tensor V. V is a representation of my quantum group. Here I put the co-evaluation map. Then here I see a crossing. So I put the grading element, beta V V dual. So let me just remind you that quantum group is very much like the universe enveloping algebra of our semi-simple Lie algebra has the same representations. Its main interesting feature is it has a special braiding operator. If I have two representations, V and W, then there's an interesting W and V. Then there's an interesting isomorphism beta W V from W tensor V to V tensor W. Using the universal R matrix. So I apply that beta whenever I see a crossing, and then whenever I see a cap, I apply the evaluation map, and I get back to my ground field. And so overall, I've defined a C of Q linear map from here to here, so I can just multiplication by some number, or just look where one goes to. So this, following this sequence of linear maps, one will be taken to some element, and this guy is the quantum not invariant. The rest you can drive in very much. And when G is equal to the Lie algebra SL2, this recovers the Jones polynomial, which can be defined in many different ways, sort of more elementary ways. So Kulbanov, I guess more than 20 years ago now, proposed the idea of categorifying this non-invariant. So what does it mean? He meant replace all vector spaces by categories. And all linear maps by functors in such a way that you could get back the original vector spaces by taking the growth and degrowth group of your category. So in particular, this rational functions in Q, or maybe it's slightly simpler just to think of it as Laurent polynomials in Q, this is going to be replaced by the category of graded vector spaces. And if you can do this kind of replacement, you'll get a categorical non-invariant. Namely, instead of your not will give you a functor from graded vector spaces to graded vector spaces, or maybe complexes of graded vector spaces. And therefore, if you just take the simplest possible graded vector space, just C in one degree, see where it goes, you'll produce a complex of graded vector spaces whose cohomology will be your non-invariant. This will give you your category. So Kulbanov proposed this idea, this problem, and explained how to do it basically for the Jones polynomial, so for the case when G is SL2. And then afterwards, for some years, it became many people did different versions of how to do it for other Lie algebras. And I'll discuss one approach, which has been, I don't know, somewhat popular, using skew-Howe duality. So from now on, for the rest of my talk, this Lie algebra G will be fixed to be SLN. So let me explain. Actually, before I get to skew-Howe duality, let me say one other thing about SLN representations. So we're not going to be interested in all SLN representations, but just the tensor products of wedge representations. So this is our wedge representation, fundamental representation of SLN. We're going to be interested in such tensor products like this. And these representations have some nice maps between them, which we're going to depict diagrammatically as follows. So if I have wedge A CN tensor wedge L CN, there's a natural map to wedge K plus L CN. And I'm going to depict it by this little trivalent vertex. And similarly, there's a map in the opposite direction, which I'll depict by the opposite looking vertex. And there's one more map I'll need, which is a sort of evaluation map. There's a map from wedge K CN tensor wedge N minus K. Maybe I'll depict it like this. There's a map from wedge K CN to the dual of wedge N minus K CN. And wedge K CN will be denoted by a strand pointing up labeled K. Wedge N minus K dual will be denoted by a strand down labeled N minus K. So there's sort of a map between these two strands, and that's denoted by a little thing called a tag. So one can try to completely diagrammatically describe this category. So what do I mean by that? We can introduce the following. Well, let me start by introducing the following category: rep SLN, or UQSLN, or UQSLN. So this is a category whose objects are tensor products of fundamental reps of SLN. So In other words, such sequences, K1, KM. And morphisms are just the usual morphisms of representations. And by the way, for this part of the talk, I'll usually not say quantum, but everything I say can be done just as well on the quantum level. But just for simplicity, I'll not keep saying quantum. Okay? And this is a category we'd like to describe diagrammatically. So we can try to introduce what's called the spider category. This is the idea going back to the work of Cooperberg. So this is a diagrammatic category. The objects are such sequences, maybe like this, okay, like this. And the morphisms are linear, formal linear combinations of diagrams of this form. So for example, you could have something like this, 2 and 1 go in, produce a 3 coming out, maybe it merges with a 1 coming here, then 4 comes out, and then maybe separately, I don't know, there's like a pairing between a 2 and a n minus. So this would be an example of a morphism from the object 2, 1, 1, 2, n minus 2, 2, 1, 1, 1, 2, n minus 2 to the object 4. So such a diagram can be interpreted as a map of SLN representation. So I have a functor between this category and this category. Obviously, this functor wouldn't be that good because there'd be some relations among these morphisms. I just considered all possible diagrams. So I'd like to mod out such linear combination of diagrams by some kind of local relations. Obvious question is which local relations? So the question of which local relations to use when n equals 2, well, it's sort of obvious. When n equals 3, this was studied by Cooperberg. But then for general n, the problem of which local relations to use was sort of open, well, until about 5 years ago. I'll explain to you the solution in a minute, how to figure out what local relations to use. And so I was talking about non-invariants, these Rushdie contrived invariants. This spider is kind of a useful way of computing with these, for computing these non-invariants. For example, if we're interested, say, it's useful because the crossing, this crossing element beta, the crossing, say beta, let's look at the crossing of.
You can't see that word anyway.
Huh?
When you're over there, the Germans can't see that
port
anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay. I try not to move too much. So a crossing of two strands like this, both labeled 1, can be written in this spider category. So, sorry, the Germans. Let me bring this down a little bit. So this category, I didn't really maybe say this enough. This category is called the spider category. The morphisms in the category are called webs. Or linear combinations of webs. These diagrams are called webs. So in the spider category, I can represent this crossing. It doesn't really live in the spider category, but it turns out I can represent it like this, minus maybe with some Q or something, this diagram. So these Qs, again, is related to the quantum group, and I'll maybe sometimes usually just ignore them, but for now, just throw it in there. And so if you're interested, if you have some complicated knot with lots of crossings, you could convert it to these kinds of webs and then compute just in the spider category. And in fact, this was done in some sense independently of this whole spider business in a paper by three authors whose names are MOY. I won't try to remember exactly their names. OK. Somebody can tell me. Yamada Otsuki Yamada, but Murakami Otsuki Yamada. Okay, we're at Kamala Tsukiyama. Okay. So this is what the spider is and why it's sort of useful from the point of view of not invariants. Now I'm going to turn the page to skew-how duality. Okay, so consider the following vector space: a big wedge power of Cn tensor Cm. So Cn tensor Cm, of course, has action of both SLn and SLm, or SLn and GLm. So just to make sure you don't get them confused, I'll call this one SLn, and I'll call the guy acting here GLm. So this is an action of SLn and GLm. Both act here. And the actions commute. And therefore, we get a map from the universal enveloping algebra of GLm onto the endomorphisms of this vector space as an SLn representation. And this map here is surjective. So I'm going to study this map now, some detail. In order to study it nicely, turns out to be useful to introduce the category version of GLm, not to be confused with the categorification of GLm, but just the category version of Lustig's item-pointer version of GLm. So let me explain that. So let's let u dot GLm be the category objects will be like with many of our categories, these sequences, AM, but now in Z to the M. So these are thought of as a weight of GLm. And the morphisms in this category between two such sequences is nothing but you take the universal enveloping of GLm and take a piece of it, of a certain weight space, the difference between the two guys. So in particular, you have some elements, the usual Chevalier generators of GLm, EIs and FIs, they become morphisms in this category. Well, for every object K, you get a morphism, which I'll write EI 1K from K to K plus alpha I. Where as usual, this K plus alpha I means you take K1, you increase it by 1 in the I slide, and decrease it by 1 in the I plus 1 slide. And similarly for FI. So here, EI denotes the usual Chevalier generator of GLm. OK. So this is a category which has a property that a weight, functors from this category to the category of vector spaces are the same thing as weight modules for GLm. In particular, if we decompose this guy in terms of weight spaces for GLm, that's the same thing. Decompose this guy. We can decompose this guy in weight spaces for GLm as follows. We write this Cn tensor Cm as Cn direct sum n times, and then decompose this big wedge as the wedge of as a direct sum over K1 Km wedge K1 Cn tensor wedge Km Cn. These pieces that appear here are the weight spaces for the GLm action on this wedge M Cn. So because of that, we get a functor from this idempotent version of GLm, or this category version of GLm, to the category of vector spaces, or sorry, to the category of representations of SLn, which takes this K1 Km object to the this wedge guy. In the case when these KIs are all between 0 and M. And this turns out to be pretty useful for studying this representation category because of the following fact. Well, one more piece of notation. I define a truncation of this category follows. So this I call the, maybe I put an N at the top, N truncation of this category. So I take this category and then I mod out by all morphisms. I kill the basically the two-sided ideal generated by the identity morphisms of objects which are not of this form. All morphisms factoring through K1 KM such that KI is not in the interval 0 up to N for some I. These are exactly the objects which are killed by this one. And after I kill these guys, then we have the following nice result. This is a theorem with Simon Kynes, self, Scott Morrison. The resulting functor between this motion category and this rep SLN is, well, it's almost an equivalence. An equivalence. It fails to be an equivalence for two reasons. One of which is sort of obvious is that the objects here are just sequences of length m, whereas here you could have arbitrary fold tensor products. And the second reason why it fails to be an equivalence is because the morphisms here can't, you might have some morphisms in here like this, the ones that I drew as a tag there. Like in this side, you have some morphism like wedge k cn tensor wedge n minus k cn. To see, and you won't see this guy on this side. So, or even maybe more simply, you won't see the on this side. You won't see the isomorphism between between wedge NCN and C. You won't see that on this side. But you can sort of other than that, this thing is an equivalence. You can obviously make that more precise. And what's really nice about this is that we can use this, we can describe this diagrammatically in the following way, using the spiders. So
Joel, I have a question.
Yeah.
What do you mean by almost? Is there a more precise statement?
Yeah, well, what I said is that there's two ways in which it fails to be equivalent. One is that it doesn't hit every object because this is limited to M fold tensor product. So that you can sort of get rid of the problem by taking a limit as M goes to infinity on the left side. And the second reason why it's not an equivalence is because you don't see this morphism that, let's say, isomorphism between wedge NCN and the trivial representation. You don't see that on the left-hand side. And that you just have to sort of add by hand if you want to. There's no. On the right-hand side, you can. But maybe you're more interested in SLN. Oh, sorry. Ben said, I could change this to GLN here, and then I'd fix the problem. Yeah.
OK, thanks.
And oh, but your question somehow reminded me of something, which I probably should have said, is that, again, I have no, gives me no Q in this thing, but you can easily add a Q. Okay. So, as I mentioned, one thing that we can, nice thing about this is it can be, it is related to this spider. So remember, I have this spider category, which remember I was mentioned. I'm sort of lacking in the local relations here. So we have a, but let's just pretend there's a spider category and it has this functor like this, and now we have this guy. And there's actually a nice way to complete this to a commutative diagram. Well, on objects, I'm going to now tell you this functor here. So on objects, this just takes objects of this category are just such sequences, and they just go to the same sequence here, which is an object in this category. Or you could say, as a diagram, it's thought of as just a sequence of arrows labeled by little piece of arrows labeled by those numbers. I'll not draw that for a second. And on morphisms, well, the as I mentioned, the generators of this category are these EI guys here, and they will go to a diagram which looks like this. So this is a morphism from the sequence K to the sequence that lives in K plus alpha I. And here I better put K1 and so on. All right. Ai, ki plus 1, an, m. And at the top, I'd better put the same thing, but have this one labeled by ki plus 1, so ki plus 1, and this one labeled ki plus 1 minus 1. And then it's kind of clear, it's an obvious guess as to what web to put in between them. I should just put the web where this guy sends a 1. One unit of energy over to his neighbor like that. So, and then the rest of the strands just run. Okay. So this EI goes to this web, which we call a ladder kind of web. It looks a little like a ladder. It goes horizontal. It looks more like a ladder. More generally, you can consider divided powers. I didn't really talk about this, but there are these divided power elements in this GLM, which are just defined to be EI to the R divided by R factorial. And they go over to a similar diagram where you send R units over to the left. Okay, so this, so there's a like statement here, which is not hard to check, is that the element EI acting here is represented by this web. And then once you know this, then this actually allows you to sort of figure out exactly what the local relations are here, because this guy, we have a presentation of it, because we have a presentation of UGLM, and this N truncation, this just imposes some additional relations, so this allows us to figure out a presentation. So essentially, we define this SPN to be a kind of limit, as M goes to infinity, of this truncated UGLM. Now, you can make this sort of more diagrammatic by figuring out exactly what these relations look like here and encoding them as diagrams, and you get some pretty simple description of these local relations for this spider cat. In fact, there's a funny history to this, which is that Scott Morrison tried to study this question of the local relations in the spider category in his PhD thesis, but not using the skew Hall duality. And he had a very long, complicated list of local relations where the relations are of, so let me just maybe mention. Like one example of such a local relation is this so-called square relation, like this. That's a SL3 relation. Anyway, it's not that important, but I just like a little bit the form. So in his relations, it involves sort of polygons of arbitrary size. And back when Scott was doing his PhD, I was already thinking about this skew Hall duality. And I said, he showed me these like complicated relations. And I thought, well, maybe you could try to get them by skew Hall duality, but they seemed way more complicated than you could possibly do with skew Hall duality. And then, I don't know, a few years later, Scott and Savin and I were talking about it as a problem again. And Scott said, actually, you know, I realized that some of those bigger polygons that I had were redundant, and maybe they all are redundant. So in fact, we proved then that actually all of his relations were redundant, except for the ones that involved squares. Okay. So this seems to be. This was interesting, but you might ask, what does it have to do with the non-invariant, so let me try return in that direction. So I mentioned before that this crossing, 1-1 crossing, had a simple expression. Well, yeah. Is there a question in MPI? Oh.
Hello?
Hi.
Do you hear me?
Hi.
So didn't you say that it's open for general n, relations?
Yeah, not anymore. I mean, it used to be open.
Oh, okay.
I mean, sorry. Until 5 years ago, it was open. But not anymore. Okay. Yeah. So from our paper, which was about 5 years ago, it's solved the problem.
Sorry. Can I have more questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So Cooper-Bergs relations can be regarded as elimination of positive curvature, right, in the diagrams. That's how he was describing them.
Yeah.
Is there anything like this? Is there a geometric meaning to what you are doing? So yes, maybe you are seeing somehow elimination of positive curvature using the Serre relation. So did you ever work this out? Or
I mean, yeah, for SL3, this n is equals 3, then, yeah, you could say that Cooper-Bergs, in fact, there's a basis of webs consisting of these non-positively curved webs. In general, there's not an exact description like that. But, sorry, there's a funny echo. But there's, in some sense, in a paper that I wrote with my former student Bruce Fontaine and Greg Cooper-Berg, we kind of gave a little bit of an explanation for where this non-positive curvature condition comes from and, in some sense, how it generalizes using the metric geometry of the affine Grassmannian. So there's a story there which I don't have time to go into.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I think that's good.
Okay. So what I was going to say now is about the crossing. So for any K and L, there's a nice formula for how you can expand this crossing as a web. So you sum over, let's assume K is smaller than L. Smaller than or equal to L. You sum from R equals 0 to K of the web you get by taking K and L. And you do a kind of ladder-like thing where you send over R units and then send back L minus K plus R units. So that's a formula, which, there was some sign and maybe some power of Q. Something. I actually don't even know really who this. This seems to be well-known for a long time. I don't know who to attribute exactly this formula to. But one thing that's nice is one can interpret this in this skew-Howe framework as a ladder. So this is actually a composition of some E and some F, or rather some F and then some E. So I would write it as E to the L minus K plus R FR. So it can be written, so this is sort of like in rep SLN. This is in the spider. And this would be in this U GL2. Sorry, with the same sign and maybe some powers of Q, something. And actually, this is up to like some overall factors of Q and stuff. This is basically the same as the element S, the which is just the matrix 0, 1, 1, 0 inside of the group GLT. Which, not very surprising. I mean, you have this wedge K tensor wedge L, and you want to flip them. Well, obviously, from the Howe dual perspective, obviously, you use this guy to flip them. But it's kind of nice that it can be written like that. OK. So now I'm going to go to the categorification now. So our goal now is to use So used skew-how duality on a categorified level, categorical level, to construct a categorical not invariance. So let me explain sort of what I'm going to mean by this. We're going to associate, so we had before tensor products of SLN representation. So if you imagine, we again, let me go back to my knot. Maybe I'll make them a little more interesting. Not much more interesting. Something, I don't know. OK, whatever. So a little more interesting knot, but maybe, oh, sorry. Maybe I try to make it unlinked. I want to have two different labels. There. Okay. There we go. Okay. So here's my knot. And maybe it has one label K and one label L. So in the Resch-Tikhon-Triave language, I would start at the bottom here with the trivial representation. Then I would get see here wedge K, Cn, tensor, it's dual. And then I would see more things. And then right over here, between here and here, I would be using wedge KCN, tensor wedge LCN, tensor some other stuff, but tensor the duals. But then right here, I would use the map which flipped the two factors. So I would use this braiding map. So here would be the braiding. So when I categorify, what I need to do is I need to replace each of these vector spaces by some categories. So maybe here I put vector spaces, or complex graded vector spaces, or complexes of graded vector spaces. And here I have to put some other category. And then here I have to put some category. And I have to put here a functor which categorifies its braiding. Okay, so this turns out to be sort of the hardest part about constructing this categorical non-invariance, is figuring out what functor to use to categorify this. Also, you have to pick what categories to use. Even once you pick what categories to use, maybe it's hard. So that's where skew-how duality, this skew-how duality can help. So I'm going to explain. There's many approaches to using skew-how duality in different ways. So I'm going to start by explaining, going back to my work with Savin Kadis and Tony Licata, and then I'll discuss some other people's work. So in our work, we the categories we used here, maybe I'll just write here, are all going to be some kind of categories of coherent sheaves. And some varieties. And then these functors will be functors between coherent sheaves. So what does it mean? Well, first let me explain the varieties. So for each such sequence K1, Km, as before, let me define a variety which I'll call Gur K. So by definition, it's the following thing. It's a kind of flag-like beast. So I start with, I'm working inside Laurent polynomials to the n. Okay, so n tuples of Laurent polynomials. And I look for sequences of subspaces of this vector space. So these Li's are subspaces, C subspaces. And also have the property that if you apply this, there's a linear operator Z on this Laurent polynomial to the N. If I apply Z on Li, I land inside of Li minus 1 for all I. And I also will use these k's. They'll be the jumps here, so the dimension of li over li minus 1 over c is ki. So just to understand this space a little bit, we can see that if we just had one of these guys, L1, this L1 would have to contain this guy. But because of this condition, it would have to live inside of Z inverse L0. Z inverse of Z L0 is nothing but like Laurent polynomials which start at Z inverse n fold. And so this, in this vector space, the dimension of the quotient here is n. So this L1 is a, and this L1 is k dimensions over k1 dimensions over this one. So the variety of all possible L1s is a Grassmannian of k sub k dimensional subspace in this CN. So in particular, for example, Gr k1 in this notation is the Grassmannian of k dimensional subspace in CN. And more generally, this variety is just an iterated bundle of Grassmannians over previous varieties. That's the varieties that we worked with. Why we work with these varieties is because it's motivated from geometric Satake correspondence. I won't get into that. Now, as I mentioned before, we're interested in studying category associated with this variety in this category of coherent sheaves. So we're going to be interested in what I call derived category of coherent sheaves on this varieties. So if you haven't seen this derived category of coherent sheaves before, you can just think this is a category whose objects are complexes of vector bundles. On these guys. In particular, the K, the Grothendieck group of this category coincides with the K theory of the variety. And in particular, it's if we complexify it, D here just means you extend the scalars, then the dimension of this thing of a guy is just its dimension. As a vector space, it's just isomorphic to this wedge K1 Cn tensor. Wedge KMCN. In other words, its dimension is just a product of binomial coefficients. OK. So these will be the categories that we associate to the levels of our thing, which will categorify the vector spaces. And then we need to define a functor associated to this crossing. So before that, to do that, we're actually going to use this skew-Hough duality and use basically this kind of a formula here. So let me introduce the following guys, Zi. So Zi, Zik. So it's a subset of Gr k cross Gr k plus alpha I. And it's defined as follows. So it's a pair of these flag-like guys. One where the jumps are given by these k1, kn, and one where the jumps are given by k's plus alpha I. In other words, the jump went up by one in one spot and down by one in another spot. So it makes sense to look at the condition that Lj is equal to Lj prime for all j not equal to I. So what that ends up looking like is we have L1 is L1 prime, and so on, contained inside Li minus 1, that's Li minus 1 prime. And that's contained inside Li, and that's contained inside Li. And also add the condition that Li is contained in Li prime. That's contained in Li prime, and that dimension is 1. That dimension is Ki. And then here I have Li plus 1 prime is the same as Li plus 1. And that dimension there is Ki plus 1 minus 1. Okay. Sometimes we draw this picture that vertically, it makes it easier to understand, I feel. But anyway. So it's a natural correspondence between two of these varieties. And this correspondence is very nice. It's smooth. And it induces a functor that's easy to understand between the coherent sheaves on one variety and coherent sheaves on the other. We'll call that functor EI. We get an EI functor from derived categories of coherent sheaves of the IK. do I have coverage? And then T=i. And then another functor fi going in the opposite direction. Sorry, the functor is defined using Z, but the thank you. The place for the coefficients to take place are these groups. Thanks. Okay. Okay. So now state theorem. So this to do with Sab and Kadis and Tony Lakata. So part one of this theorem is that these functors define a categorical GLM action. Okay. So what precisely is such a what exactly do I mean by categorical GLM action? So this is something I'm going to be talking about more later, maybe tomorrow as well. Probably I'll get to it more tomorrow, but let me just explain roughly what I mean by this. So I have a bunch of categories associated to each the weights of GLM, these categories of these guys. And these functors between them, they satisfy the same relations as in GLM. So in particular, for example, we take this EI, FI. These would be two functors between. This would be a functor from coherent sheaves on Ger K back to coherent sheaves on Ger K. And these satisfy the following relation. And if I do EI, FI, then it's isomorphic to doing the functors in the opposite direction plus some amount of copies of the identity functor. How many copies of the identity functor on this category? How many copies of the identity functor? It turns out to be ki plus 1 minus ki. So of course, this is only possible if ki plus 1 is ki minus ki plus 1. This is only possible if ki is bigger than ki plus 1. If it's not, then the similar equation holds, but on the other side. So this is what I mean. One thing I mean by a categorical GLM action, that these relations like this hold. But I'll discuss this more later, exactly. And the second thing we proved about these functors is that you can build use them to define, to build an equivalence of categories categorifying this braiding using a complex like that, coming from that. So explain that. So we form a complex. So follow it. So this is following sort of ideas of Shuang and Ruquier. We build a complex. I call it, let's say, theta I. So the complex looks like this, ei to the ki plus 1 minus ki goes to, sorry, there are versions of these like functors where we have a exponent, this divided power version of it too. Ei ki plus 1 minus ki plus 1 fi, and so on. So I can build a complex. This complex is like a categorification of this sum here. And so this complex will be a functor. The question was whether the functors EI and FI are exact. And no, they're not exact. It's a little bit subtle. There's some small subtlety, what I mean by a complex, because they're not exact functors. So There's two approaches, which I think turn out to be equivalent, but one is you can work in the homotopy category of the drive category, and the second approach is you can, which is our original approach is the second one, which I'll explain, is that you can take cones of these this kind of complex within the drive category. But then later in Savin's later paper, he just worked in the homotopy category. And we can build a complex like this, and this functor is an equivalence. An equivalence between the coherent sheaves on one of these varieties to coherent sheaves on same kind of variety, but where we've switched the order of the I plus 1 and I labels. And sort of part three of the theorem, which I guess maybe only appeared in a later paper by Savin, is that this can be used to define categorical non-invariants. So again, how is it used to define categorical non-invariants? By sort of this picture here. So at the bottom, we start graded vector spaces. There's some functor which I didn't explain, which is easy to describe, which produces you sort of an object in this coherent sheaves on this guy with two opposite labels, and then so on. And whenever you see a crossing, that's when you use this big complex. And the point is that this complex or the resulting functor is very hard to guess or understand if you're not using that it comes from a GLM action. In particular, this functor doesn't come from a simple correspondence between these two varieties. So there is a simple correspondence between these two varieties. It has many different irreducible components. This functor is a certain sheaf supported on that correspondence, but a hard to describe sheaf if you don't think about it in terms of this complex. So the categorical action is really giving you something deep that you wouldn't see or you wouldn't know how to see otherwise. Maybe since we have about 5 minutes, I'll just end with a little preview of where we'll go next time. So this is relatively old work. I mean, most of what I'm talking about is relatively old. If I get to the annular stuff, that'll be newer. But So later, after our work, other people, Sabin and then later other people too, realized that there's nothing particularly special about the fact that we were using these coherent sheaves on these varieties. What was really special is that we were using categorical GLM actions. So there's a theorem which is due in different versions to Sabin, to Marco Mackay and Ben, and to Kefalek and Rose, which basically says something like any categorical GLM action categorifying this representation, wedge n, cn tensor cm, leads to categorical SLN non-invariants. So tomorrow I'll explain this theorem. In particular, I'll explain more about what this means. Exactly. And we'll see that this picture I wrote here admits an interesting sort of categorification. Well, where sort of these two sides are together replaced by something called a foam category. And this guy here is replaced by this categorified quantum group, or truncated version of this categorified quantum group. And just like in the decategorified setting where we didn't know the local relations we should put in the spider category, we were able to deduce these local relations from the skew-how duality and from the enveloping algebra here. In a similar way, Kefalik and Rose deduced the local relations in the foam category using the relations in the categorified quantum group. So I'll explain about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Across the ocean.
Thanks, Joel. So this gives an unreduced version, right? Is there a natural operation or modification that gives a reduced version?
Not that I know of.
I mean, you can.
I'm looking at Ben for an answer.
You can mod out by the action of the invariant of the unknot. And maybe actually we should be looking at Matt for an answer. Where is he?
I don't know if you apply all cups but one, you get a function from the GER K1 category to itself. What do those apply? Just entering the vectors. I mean, what is specific?
You mean it's sort of like invariant of this. Okay, so the.
So I think our mics are back on.
Okay. Anyway, the short answer is no. The short answer is I don't know. There is some suggestion if you have a long knot, like a 1-1 tangle, you get an invariant of it, and I guess from that you could
get all the interesting material.
Yeah. I never thought of it. Any other question?
No one else does, I do. It's my privilege, right? So, morally, you'd want to think... Oh, I'm sorry, I was standing in the corner. Can you see me now?
Yeah.
So, morally, you'd want something like maybe a categorified knot invariant. So if you think in terms of like the Rashitik and Triev construction of knot invariants, then you sort of think that the input data you want to define just a standard knot invariant is something like a Brademanoidal category, maybe with some dualizability conditions. And for a categorified knot invariant, maybe you'd want a Brademanoidal category or a Brademanoidal 2 category instead. And you've possibly described some of the pieces of a Brademanoidal 2 category. Like in this case, the objects might be indexed by these sequences and some of the Hom spaces you've written down. But do you have a sense of like morally what this Brademanoidal 2 category should be, or if there is like a precise answer?
Okay. Yeah, this is going to be a little bit long, but so associated to any semi-simple Lie algebra, there's this UG thing, which is this KLR 2 category, and you can study the category of modules, or two modules, whatever you call them, two representations of this KLR2 category. And I think the expectation is that this thing is supposed to be this Brademanoidal 2 category. And in the case when we're in the SLM situation, there'll be like a, if I get this right. There'll be there's a skew-how duality relationship that there'll be a two functor between this UDLM and this guy, which is sort of and this was constructed in by Mackay and Webster. So in some sense, if you're working with an arbitrary Lie algebra, the like right thing to do is to work with this KLR2 category and just category of modules and just look at its rated two category structure. I'm not sure. And from that construct the knot invariants. Now no one's exactly been able to do that. So Ben's work is the closest to that. So for arbitrary Lie algebra, he has a way of hooking up certain objects in this category and functors between them in such a way that you can construct the knot invariants for any Lie algebra G, and but not sort of not like in a not in a in a more ad hoc fashion, not in a by saying, oh, it's an it's a whatever Brademanoid L2 category, and therefore it produces non-invariants. It's in a more ad hoc way. Now, I don't know of anyone who's succeeded in carrying it out in a non-ad hoc way. I guess I know that Ruquier for many years was working on this Brademanoid L2 category structure, but I think it.
I think he claimed and then unclaimed that he could do this.
Yeah. Do you know of anyone who has anything beyond what's in your work?
I think he and Andy Mannion have been working on this in like recent years and made like a little bit of progress for GL1-1.
Oh, that's what
we
talked about that.
But, I mean, I think somehow my takeaway from their work was that Raphael had realized it was harder than he thought.
Okay. Did you hear Ben's answer?
Yeah, we can hear him. No problem.
Okay, good. So the short answer is that yes, this is exactly what you would like to do, but it's sort of too hard. So instead, you do what Ben did. But instead of that, you can do what I'm talking about now, in the SLN case. But I'll come back to this. I'll come back to this a bit tomorrow.
Thanks. You might have another question or two.
I have a question related to the first half of the talk.
Hi, Katarina.
Sorry, I'm a bit jet lagged, so I can ask now the stupid questions. I'm wanted with a non-categorified picture. So going back to webs, when you find these relations, how do you check that you have everything, that you have all the relations?
Because
so just when you define the when you write down the defining relations for the web category, right? So assume I know these relations. How would I check that you have all of them? That it's enough.
I mean,
is there a trick or is it? Is it?
Well, the trick is I don't know how to do it without this Kuhau duality. So
but do you need explicitly some dimension formulas of Hom spaces,
no.
or do you
no.
not?
No. So what you
okay?
So there's this picture is still here. So I have this diagram, and so let's say I've defined this by these local relations here.
Yes.
And so I want to know that this like I have some Hom space here and some Hom space here. I want to know this map is injective. The way I prove it is by I know that this map is injective, that there's no more relations here, and this guy I sort of know very well. And why this thing works is the following fact: is basically because it's this quotient is a sure quotient. So I have this. Sorry, can you just turn off the mic? Because otherwise, there's a funny echo. So I have this UGLM mapping to endomorphisms of this. Let's see if this is here. And I'm interested in what the kernel of this map is. And the claim, so this dot, let's just forget the category for a second, just think of algebras. The claim is that the kernel of this map is just generated by these one k's where k is not a weight. So the kernel. The right hand side. And the reason why that works is because if you, when you decompose this into GLM representations, what's important is that it's a saturated representation of GLM. So if V lambda occurs on the right hand side, that's a GLM representation occurs in the right hand side, and mu is less than lambda, then V mu occurs on the right hand side. So whenever you have a representation of any semi-simple Lie algebra with this property, that it's saturated in this sense, so in particular, it can't possibly be irreducible, but it's a big direct sum of irreps, and it's saturated. If an irrep occurs, then any smaller irrep also occurs, then it's a general thing, which is easy to prove. I think it's originally maybe due to, I have no idea who it's originally, maybe to Gaudi is the published proof. Then the kernel of the map from the enveloping algebra, or the dot version of the enveloping algebra, is just generated by the weights, which are not in the right-hand side. So for these saturated representations like this, it's very easy to find the kernel, and therefore it's very easy to find all the relations here, because there, that's the kernel. And then once you know that, it's very easy to find their diagrammatic description. So one thing that's interesting is if you replace this with a sim, you get an interesting contrast, because this property doesn't hold anymore. It's not saturated anymore, as you can see in some simple examples. Like the symmetric hadrality looks like it should be just as good as skew hadrality, but it's not just as good, because we don't have this saturated condition. And because you don't have this saturated condition, this kernel of this map is not just generated by these weight spaces. So things are more complicated. So you have this sim spider. And you have to introduce some extra, you have to do a lot of work to actually figure out the relations, though this was done in a slightly complicated way recently, or not that recently, but by, no way I'll remember exactly who's off.
Dubenhauer.
And not McKay.
You can ask Daniel.
Oh, yeah, you're there. Anyway, so I think Daniel Dubenhauer and others solve this problem, but it's more complicated in the sim case because this saturated thing holds. But in the wedge case where this saturated thing, sorry, this saturated thing doesn't hold. But in the wedge case where the saturated thing does hold, then it's very easy to prove that you have all the relations. Any other question?
May I also be questioned?
Just a second.
Will you talk tomorrow about foams, evaluating closed form foams colored by various reps?
Yes.
Then no further questions.
Are there any final questions from us? I have a question. So is it known, are there other like known descriptions of these categories, DB, or of coherent sheaves and these GERs, for example, like matrix factorization, are these known to be equivalent to the categories of matrix factorizations?
No. Not. Okay. Later, I mean, tomorrow, if I get to this annular stuff, then I'll talk about sort of diagrammatic presentation of these categories in terms of this annular. Annular foam categories. So when will you get to that? Tomorrow? But a priori, no, there's not. I mean, and as you know, and as I'll talk about tomorrow, the non-invariant you get this way is matches non-invariants from other places, for example, the actual category matching.
And the proof of that uses the fact that they're all just described via skew hadrality in the. Sorry, am I ruining the.
You're ruining the punchline tomorrow, but that's.
Wow.
Is there any similar story, like not in type A?
Yeah. So there's people I've worked on in type B, C, and D, I think, similar kinds of how dualities and trying to use that to describe a spider. Again, maybe Daniel would probably know the most recent results in that direction. even recently, there was a paper about type Q, like the type Q superalgebra, working using the describing its spider by the same idea. I had no idea that was possible. It's like, I forgot who that was.
Any further questions?
So can I ask one more question? Because we were talking about these categories. Do you know what the center of these categories is?
Which one?
Of the coherent sheaves?
Not off the top of my head, I guess. Probably I could think about it, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Matt has one last question.
I have one last question, so maybe you'll even get to it. But you have these line bundles on this your K.
Yeah.
And so tensoring with them acts on the DV, on the co. Do those have analogs in the spider?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So then I think we should have more questions tomorrow, and thank Joel again.